You know, I was just having a conversation IRL with somebody just the other day, and we were discussing, this person was telling me that, you know, as you get older, it's amazing how fast the years fly by, and that is so true. And the weeks flying by, I'm sitting here, I can't believe it's already time. I was sitting here this morning having my coffee before sitting down here in the prestigious studios to record this 109th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. And I was sitting there thinking, I cannot believe it's already time to do the show again. I mean, not in a negative sense or anything. I just can't believe it's already been a week. And it's already March. This year is already well underway. The time flies. And it is true. The older you get, the time just, it's just insane how quick the time goes by. I know a lot of it's perspective. I mean, when you're 20 years old, you can talk to somebody who's 20 years old and you say 20 years and they're like, well, it's a long time because they've only been alive for 20 years. So it seems like forever. When you get to be my age, it's like 20 years. Let's see. 20 years ago, I was in my early 30s. That seems like yesterday. 20 years from now, I'm going to be in my early 70s. Kind of depressing, honestly. Welcome to the show. It's great, as always, to be together, get the congregation together here at the Parish of the Patriots. Very good. Very glad y'all could join us this week. As always, we do appreciate those who aren't shy, pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, you can find the information at the bottom of the description page. We have snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We have Monero. Got the email down there. If you're crypto supporter, drop a note. I always love to hear from y'all. It's always very nice. And if you have another weirdo cryptocurrency address that's not listed, then feel free to drop me an email. I'll do my best to get you an address from that. So let's get into one of my favorite parts of the show, listener supporter mailbag, the back and forth with the listeners. This is from Brian, who has a bunch of balls in the air right now and praying that God will work out the timing. Thank you very much, Brian. And you know, it's you just got to remember that it falls on us to do what we can do. And I was reminding somebody this in a regular conversation the other day. You know, we can do what we can do, you know, but after that, you know, that's the stuff that's in the Lord's hands. And at some point in time, we have to make our decisions. We have to make the best decisions we can, the best judgment calls we can. And there's always risk involved. But and then once we do that, we live with it. And the things that are out of our control, and it's always hard to keep that line there, you know, what's in our control and what isn't in our control. And, you know, but just at the end of the day, we have to make our decisions, and we can pray on it, pray for God's guidance. But at the end of the day, we can do the things we can do. And then the things as far as what other people are going to do, what's going to happen to the economy, what's going to happen, you know, in this crazy world around us, we don't have control over that. And we have to just trust in God for that. That's where the faith in God thing comes in. And it's, like I say, it's an important thing because it's so easy to fall on it one way or the other. You know, I've fallen into it myself, you know, and it's like we want to put off onto God, like all the decision making, like God needs to somehow make these decisions for us. But at the end of the day, we have to make our own decisions. It'll all work out. But I mean, one way or the other, it's kind of like I'm thinking back to last week's Christian specific message, last week's sermon, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, we just live with it and life goes on. So I hope things do work out. It is my hope that everything will work out for you. And don't worry, you know, just have some faith in yourself, you know, make the best decisions you can, and don't be afraid to change course if that seems the right way. And at the end of the day, the other stuff that's not in your control, that's the stuff where you have faith and trust in God to guide you forward. Support coming in from Ohio, no note there, but it is very much appreciated. Believe me. And Triangle Whip, good to hear from Triangle again. GPD, enjoying the sermons. Riddle me this. Why is math considered racist? Answer below. Answer 6 million minus 3 million. Do I need to get equations for for cremations? Yes. It's very racist, your math, sir. It's very racist, very, very anti-Semitic. If you didn't catch our Friday installment, this past Friday, the Daily Nationalist with Sir Longshanks and myself. You want to catch that? It's good stuff about our Texas values, according to our illustrious governor. He was kind enough to come out and remind us what our Texas values are, and I'm so glad he did because I would forget. You know, it's yeah, pretty much God, guns, and Israel. That's our value. Finally, from Mr. T, our weekly supporter there, GPD. Thanks for being you. Well, thanks to all of you, and it is very much appreciated. Again, if you want to be a part of financially supporting the show, information is at the bottom of the page. And like I say, don't be shy to send a note. It's always good to hear from you. It's I was thinking back when back way back in the day, for probably most of you were born long before internet, you know, and like especially like when we were kids in school, you know, sometimes you would have a pen pals, like somebody you haven't met, but it's like somebody lives way off. Of course, we had to write letters, and you would write letters back and forth to these people you hadn't ever actually met. You would have a pen pal. I was thinking today is kind of reminiscent of that. So again, it is always great to hear from y'all. It's we got to maintain our sanity here in the ever expanding clown world. And as we rock along, as many of you know, or may not know, but I've talked about before, you know, generally, kind of as the weeks go on, I'll sit in the mornings when I'm enjoying the first cup of coffee, and I'll think about various things. And a lot of times I will jot these things down. So I at least have a starting point for the show. You know, I don't really have show notes. I don't, but at least this gives me something, like, you know, this week I have a blank page. So we are even more flying by the seat of our pants than usual. And no, we're not going to sit here and talk about what everybody else is talking about, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Except for this, I will say this about it, because this is something that I think everybody can take away from this. And that is to be very wary. Always be very cautious of controlling people. And how do you spot controlling people? Because this is the takeaway from all of that nonsense. No, I didn't watch it. I did catch clips of it. And of course, they're talking about it all over, so you can't miss it. But the thing that is amazing about this is, you know, because sometimes you don't know when you get emotionally involved with people and you think, you know, this is the way to go. And it's hard to miss the red flags. But let me tell you something. One of the big red flags is people who would isolate you from your family and your friends and those who would support you. And this guy here, this is Simp Harry, he is in that position. You know, this control freak, this manipulator. I think it's funny how the media is always talking about, you know, abusers, and you got to be aware these abusers are out here, and they talk about the pattern of an abuser. And one of the things they always say about an abuser is that they will do, and this part is true, is they will isolate you from those, you know, who can give you like support, because then you could break away from their, you know, from their control. And that's exactly, it's funny because the media has completely ignored that is exactly what this woman has done to this guy. I mean, you can sit here and, yeah, I mean, he, you know, it's his decisions that brought him where he is. I'm not sitting here feigning a bunch of sympathy for Simp Harry, but at the same time, put yourself in his shoes. Let's say he wakes up today and realizes what a disaster this is, but now there, because of this woman, he has this huge chasm between his family and his friends and his longtime associates, you know, and himself. And it would be just so difficult for him to break free of that. Now he's fully under his control, and it's always like Meghan and Harry, you know, he's like a background character. And apparently we're supposed to, you know, as a society, this is A-OK. It sounds silly, but I kind of on a certain level do feel sorry for the guy, because if he hasn't yet, at some point he is going to realize what a disaster this is. And, you know, he's wrecked his relationship with his family. And, you know, whether they're tax paid celebrities or not, at the end of the day, your family is one of those things that, you know, you should have as a constant in your life. I mean, maybe not constantly every day involved in your life or anything, but it is, you know, it is a constant in your life, and somebody that breaks you away from that just to keep you isolated so that you're right there under their thumb and they can control you. That's something that you should take away for yourself. Is if you get involved with somebody and they basically begin to steer and manipulate and demand that you cut yourself off from all of those who support you and all of those that, you know, your family and such that you should have, that you should have a relationship with, that you could fall back on and count on if you hit a rough patch. If they're trying to steer you and build a chasm between those people and yourself with their cunning words and their manipulative behavior, that is a red flag. And more than likely, you're gonna do well to get away from those kind of people. So I thought that was something worth throwing in. Like I say, not that I'm, you know, I'm loath to talk about these people, but that is something I think that everybody can take away from it for their own personal lives. You get involved with somebody that wants to immediately start isolating you and build drama and make it to where you have to choose between me and them. That is always a demand. That's a demand nobody should make of you. And when they are, then again, that's a huge red flag, and you do well to stay away from folks such as that. We're also getting our huge stimulus. Yay! The huge, getting your $1,400. Congratulations. Don't spend it all in one place. It was hard fought for. The media continues to act like this entire bill is the $1,400, because that's all they talk about. Oh, everybody's going to get those stimulus. Oh, aren't you glad to get your $1,400? They've detonated the economy in the name of the doom virus. But hey, now they're coming to bail you out. They're going to spend it. Oh, and it was a hard-fought battle. The Republicans said, we can't afford to just go throwing money out here to people. $1,400 a person. Look, it's this many trillion dollars. It's 9%. It's as they tell you about how much they're being so generous to you by throwing you some table scraps here with your $1,400. Just remember, it's 9%. So if the entirety of that bill was stimulus money, was relief for the people who are suffering because they've detonated the economy in the name of the deadly virus, you would probably be getting something like a $10,000 stimulus check. Let that soak in. Because it's like 9%. It's like 9% or something like that of this budget is actually going to these checks. So one thing the media doesn't ask is, where's that other 91%? Where's that other 91% going? Because I think that would be kind of relevant. And if it wasn't going to these other places, people and such, then you'd be getting like a $10,000. Now, there would be, if you're a married couple, that'd be $20,000 dropping into your bank account. You do something with that. You go buy a better car. You could go. Instead, they give you this. You know, hey, don't get me wrong, I'll take the money. We're all poor, but we'll take what we could get. But seriously, they give you this and act as though they're being so generous when it's 9% and all the rest. You know, the money's being funneled into all the right pockets. All of the right people are getting the 91%. You get the 9% and they go on and on about how generous. It's really insulting. Oh, no, it is. It's really insulting that they're throwing you a few table scraps that ultimately saddle. Well, it's never going to be paid back, but in principle, they're saddling you with debt. It would be like if somebody went out and ran up your credit card and, you know, and put like $1,000, ran up $1,000 on your credit card and then gave you $90 and said, look here, I'm giving you $90. Congratulations. Yeah, go spend it all in one place. Go out and get you something nice. Enjoy your $90. And you'd be like, but wait, you ran my credit card up $1,000. You ran my credit card up $1,000. It gave me $90 back and you keep telling me how generous you are. You're being so kind. So kind, so generous. I'd honestly like to know where the rest of that money went, since essentially, technically, you're borrowing it in my name.
Don't ask that though. It's going to, for instance, they're allotting this much money to pay for COVID vaccines.
Oh, so, you know, because paying for COVID vaccines sounds a lot better than we're funneling it to the big pharmaceutical corporations, isn't it? But it's the same thing, isn't it?
We're putting money aside for COVID vaccines, we'll have you know, in our humanitarian spirit.
Yes, that sounds much more palpable. It goes down much easier than we're funneling this many billions of dollars to the big pharmaceutical companies. Such generosity. Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, this highlights, though, the importance of a free press. No, it really does, because we don't have a free press. If we had an actual free independent press, they would be asking this. It wouldn't be your humble host here on our humble show bringing these questions up. You would have people on network TV asking hard questions to government officials, being like, well, where's the rest of this money going? Well, how come if you're going to spend this many $1 trillion, then how come you don't just send all of that to the American people? You know, if you got $20,000 per couple instead of $2,800, you know, you could afford to go, and you want to go get the mystery vaccine to get your DNA tampered with, you'd have the money. You'd go buy your own damn vaccine, right? And you have quite a bit left over. But see, the problem is you might not choose to do that. And how else are the big pharmaceutical corporations going to get their money? So we got to funnel that money in. We got to funnel the funny money. This is our tongue twister for this week. You got to funnel the funny money to the big pharmaceutical corporations. Sorry, here's your $1,400. Don't spend it all in one place. Well, like I said, we don't have a free press. You can see why that's be an important thing. Because then you have people out there in front of TV cameras putting these people on the spot. Where's the rest of this money going? How come you just don't give it all to the American people? They could buy their own vaccines. No, don't tell us a general vague term like, oh, it's going to help with child care. That is so vague. That could be going anywhere. That is not a specific who is getting that money. Who's getting the check? Who's getting the direct deposit? But they don't tell us any of that. We don't have anybody asking the questions except for here in shows such as this. And of course, we have a very limited audience. We're humble. Very limited audience, to say the least. But we don't have a free press. They're all in on it. It's all controlled by the oligarchy. So, you don't need to think about that. In fact, if you bring it up, you'll no doubt, if you somehow have managed to maintain a social media account, I don't know how you would do that. But, probably be banned for disinformation. Information and truth is now disinformation. Everything is upside down. If you're a Christian believer, no, we're not getting in the sermon early. I'm just saying, if you're a Christian believer, that actually makes sense to you and you understand why that is. If you're not, you're out here floating around going, why is this? Everything is like a mirror image. Everything is backwards. But as a Christian believer, you understand, you get why that is. It's amazing. Lies are truth. Truth is disinformation. Truth is disinformation. It's also hatred. Truth is a lot of things now, and none of them are portrayed in a positive light in this society. All of these things they demonize. All of these things they tell you off of. What it comes down to is the truth, and that's the one thing they hate. They hate the truth. Everything is a lie. Everything that is celebrated, everything that is promoted, everything that is shoved down your throats 24/7, it's all a lie. Justice is denied. We have a justice system that's involved in anything except for justice. A legal system that is really just anything about legality. Everything is topsy-turvy. Everything is upside down. The world has been turned on its head. And of course, they're pushing back business as usual. Now that we have the senile front man who is the quote unquote president of the country, now everything can get back on schedule. And with that, we're getting the push for, of course, more wars. Once upon a time, the supposed left in this country was actually anti-war, but no more. Those days are long gone. You know, there were a few that held out. You know, over the years, I've developed a begrudging respect for Cindy Sheehan. I don't know how many of you remember her, but when Bush kicked off after 9/11, Bush kicked off the Iraq War. She was a staunch protester, and the media was fawning over her at that time. Of course, how times change just depends on the narrative at the time. But the media was fawning over her. She'd sit out there in her lawn chair in front of Bush's ranch and protest Bush, you know, and she was staunchly anti-war, against the war. She lost a son in the war. And of course, people were whipped up into the, patriotism being defined as more wars and the Kool-Aid. They were drunk on the Kool-Aid back then. And everybody was whipped up into this, yes, God bless America, we're going to go kick those Muslims' ass, you know. So she got a lot of derision from people. But you have to say this for the woman, she stuck with her guns. And when Obama continued the war policy, she continued her anti-war stance. She didn't do like all the rest of these hypocritical liberals who, as soon as Obama was in office and he started doing the exact same stuff and expanding it and going into Libya and going here and going there and more wars, you know, the rest of the liberals all of a sudden became war hawks, you know, all of a sudden, because maybe it would be racist to be anti-war, that I don't know. But she stuck with her guns and she stayed anti-war. And she, of course, predictably, the media turned on her right away. And all of a sudden, you didn't hear from her anymore. And if you did, it was quite a bit in a negative light. And you always got to respect whether you agree with somebody 100% or not. I mean, I'm sure someone like Cindy Sheehan would probably disagree with me on probably 90% plus of the things I believe in. But respect is due and respect is due. And when people believe in something and they prove it by sticking with it, that you got to give that person your respect. So, you know, you have to respect that. She stayed anti-war when everybody else all of a sudden flipped switch and all of a sudden that was A-okay. Well, the war program is back on. They're pushing for more wars. And you have to wonder how stupid they are, because who knows? I mean, who knows? I mean, they keep agitating, antagonizing Iran, Russia, China. And you can't help but know, because I hear people say things like, well, you know, it's because right now, the one thing America has going for it is its super powerful military. And I don't know what they're seeing, because I don't see a super powerful military. I really don't. The military has become this, and to get off on a side note about the military, because taking an exit real quick and hopefully I'll be able to reel this back in and get back on point. But you know, all these people back at the end of last year and all with the whole Trump thing, you know, and the QAnon stuff, and the military is going to step in and we're going to have martial law and da-da. And it amazing. One of the things I've found amazing over the years is all these people who will be so critical of the government, you know, and oh, the government's corrupt. And yes, that's true. And all of these things that they dislike about the government. But they act as though the military is not a part of the government. You know, like all of the things that is wrong with the government, all of the corruption that has ate up this entire stupid democracy system that we live under, somehow the military has immunity to that. Maybe they got the vaccine, they had their DNA rewritten, and they're somehow immune to all of these things that we hate about the rest of the government, all these things that you point out about the rest of the government, that's corruption and all of the rest of it, the constant push for quote-unquote diversity, which just simply means no diversity, anything but regular white people in it. You know, all of, but somehow the military is immune to that. They're like a magical organization. They're like a magical organization, and they would somehow be immune to that. And all these people were seriously sitting around, you know, hoping and believing that the military was going to step in. I mean, the possibility that was not zero, but to put all of this real belief, and people are still holding on, like, well, March, what was it? March 4th or whatever was going to be the day, because that's the traditional inauguration day. And they thought there, you know, there were people actually promoting the idea, I guess, that they were going to wake up and suddenly Trump is the real president of the United States officially. Yes, we all know they stole the election. I mean, officially, they were just up front about it. It's not like it's the first time, but they were up front about this time. They weren't real inconspicuous about it, and they don't care. I mean, they just don't care. But somehow the military was going to rescue us. And that's just nonsensical. The military is ate up with just as much of the nonsense as all of the rest of the government. Now, bringing it back into point here, this notion that we have the super powerful military. And so now is the time. If they're going to flex on Russia and China and Iran, now is time to do it before the whole thing falls apart. But what are they going to flex with? We have this super powerful military that hasn't had a real victory since they defeated what amounts to the tiny island nation of Japan in 1940. You know, because you can't count Germany, because the Soviet Union did most of the legwork on that. So basically, the one that America, real victory that America can claim, has been back 70 plus years ago. You know, and ever since then, it's just been loss after loss. They're bogged down in the quagmire of Afghanistan. They can't beat a bunch of goat herders with AK-47s, but we're going to flex. We're going to flex on Russia and China.
He said, well, that's just because.
No, stop. Stop. Don't make a bunch of excuses. It is what it is. I mean, you have to be, you either win the fight or you lose the fight. And if you lose the fight, all, you know, is,
well, yes, it's because they didn't fight fair.
Well, I got news for you, because these Pentagon people, these generals and stuff, they have this wet fantasy because they get their asses kicked in these guerrilla conflicts because they're horribly ill prepared for them. And what they really, really, really want is an opponent who will just line their tanks up out there, not have any air superiority. We can come in and bomb the tanks and declare victory. Yes, I am oversimplifying this a little bit, but if you get down psychologically, I think, to the way these people think is what they hunger for. What we need is not a frustrating enemy that pops up out of nowhere and blows our shit up and then disappears. We need somebody that will come out there and line up in a row, and then we can shoot their asses. They want to play an AI game, you know, like you got your online games that you play, and you have the option. You can play against AI on simple mode, or you can play, you know, PvP, player versus player. And they want to play against AI. They want to play where the dumb computer on easy mode, and then they just simply, you know, the targets just walk out there and none of their shots hit, and you just mow them down, and then you can say you're bad air, kick their ass. Yeah. but you play on that mode and you start thinking, you know, you're all that. But then you go and play PvP, and all these other players, they've been honing their skills, and you're out there waiting for them to line up out there, and they won't do it. They keep ducking, taking cover, and shooting your ass, and your guy keeps dying, and you keep having to go back to the spawn point. Keep having to go back to the spawn point, because I mean, they have this wet dream that they, well, if we get a more of a conventional, what we need is a conventional war. We need a war against a country that's going to roll their... I got news for you. These people aren't stupid. Russia, China, Iran, they're not going to go line up. It's PvP. It's not against AI. They're not going to do what you want them to do. They very well know what you want them to do. They know what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. This notion that, oh, the military, we just need a different kind of enemy. We need a more powerful enemy. That's what they're saying. Imagine if you just wake up every day and tell yourself what a badass you are. And yet you go out and you purposely, because... because this is what bullies do. You go out and you purposely pick fights with guys that are like a third your size. You guys, these little guys, you know, people like that, real assholes. You know, I'm big badass. But so what do? They go out and they find the littlest guy. They go into the bar and find the littlest guy and then go pick a fight with him and be like, I'm going to kick your ass. But imagine in that situation, every time he does, the little guy kicks his ass. And yet he said, well, I kicked his ass. He's sitting there with a bloody nose. Little guy walks off in a huff, you know, with a bloody fist. And that happens time and again. The guy sits there and reasons to himself, well, the problem is it's just frustrating fighting these little guys. I need to fight somebody big. Then I can show everybody what a badass I am. And it's like logic would say, well, these little guys keep kicking your ass, but you're going to take on a bigger opponent. I don't get this reasoning that the one thing America has going for it right now is this super powerful military, because they don't. I mean, they can't beat goat herders. They're not going to beat Russia, China, or Iran. These countries have been prepping for this for decades now. The diversity military, who has just heroically changed regulations so soldiers of all genders can paint their nails now and still be within dress code. Of course, all genders as if gender exists, because we have to be gender fluid or whatever the hell. They're going to march off and fight against the Russians or against the Chinese or against and or Iran, or better yet, all three. I don't know. It's utter madness. And I don't, maybe they will be driven to that level of madness to actually go off and attempt to do that. And maybe that's one of the ways in which the judgment comes down. It's just a massive, just a military wipeout. And of course, our media would be saying, I was thinking about this, if they did get into a war with a major power, and how bad they would be getting, you know, our military would be getting wiped out. You know, and I would be thinking that, like, right up to the point that they just essentially everything was wiped out, The military had to come and double down their forces, come back home and double down their forces to protect Washington, D.C. You know, our media would still be telling us, we've got those chinks on the run. We've got the yellow peril is running in fear because of America, you know, and the reality would be like the entire Navy is at the bottom of the South China Sea or some shit, you know, but they would just tell us because, you know, reality is upside down. It's turned on our head. It's whatever the media says it is. Simply incredible. It's incredible. They've got the military, this huge fence now, and the military stationed all around. I mean, I've always found it so telling that the historical quote unquote villains that we've been presented, you know, the evil mustache man. And you see these pictures and you see these videos of him riding in the open top car and leaning out and shaking people's hands. And our democracy leaders are all behind all this security and bulletproof glass and nobody is allowed within 5 miles of them. You know, and now we've gone it a step further. Now they're just they're just barricading up the whole buildings. They're just barricading the whole buildings. They got this huge fence up. They got the military on the ground. They've got all these troops out there guarding them from what? You. To keep the people away from you. Part of the budgets they're demanding, they want to spend all this money on security in their home congressional districts because your wonderful democracy representatives that are up there representing you, at some point in time, they have to go back to their office in the home district. And the people apparently aren't real happy with the way they're being represented. So they're going to need more money for security, armed security, probably send some troops down. You go down to your local congressman's office and you're going to have the National Guard there to protect, make sure you can't get anywhere near them because you have the democracy and they work for you and they represent you. You see, it's government by the people, for the people. They just have to have the military to be sure the people don't get anywhere near them because they're being represented so well, getting represented good and hard. I don't know how we're going to live with all this representation. We keep getting represented just good and hard. To the hilt, we're being represented. So we're going to have all of this security, all this protection to keep them away from us, to keep us away from them. And what's funny about that is the people aren't really going to do anything. I mean, they keep going on. I don't know if they're trying to create a scenario or if they're really that paranoid. Maybe there's deep down inside some sort of a part of them and be like, man, they think they really deserve for the people to come in there and kick their ass or something, you know, so they have to have all the security. Because I don't see the people doing that. I see the people walking around with their masks on and obediently doing whatever they're told. But they still got their guns. It's so tiring. It is also tiring. I get so tired of the guns as a magic talisman. You will run into this with Americans, and they want to deny the reality of the system that we live under. And inevitably, among normicons, you'll run into this at some point in time when you're pointing this out, and they might agree with you, and they'll talk about, you know, how bad it is and the system's so utterly corrupt and now we're just getting this weird global communist thing that they're creating, this great reset and everything. And at some point in time, your normal conservative friends will tell you this. They will say, well, the one thing we've got here, though, we still got our guns. That's what they're going to try to come after. And I still maintain they're not. I mean, they probably do some window dressing legislation of gun control because that's what their supporters think they're supposed to do. But that's the last thing. They're going to come try to confiscate our guns. Why would they? Why would they step on that trap? Because I mean, they've got all these, however many, I don't know, billions of weapons that float around the United States and everybody's wearing their mask and walking around. We'll run into the mentality of the gun is the magic talisman. And these people will sit here and say, well, we've still got our guns. You know, they still cling to this hope that somehow, like, that's a magic thing. Americans, we still have the Second Amendment. We gave up the first, but we still have the Second Amendment. One thing that's holding them back from doing whatever they want is our guns. Because I don't see anything holding them back. They're pretty much, from what I see, they're doing whatever the hell they want to do. They just stole an election, and they don't give a shit that everybody knows. Because the truth of the matter, and I'm not putting people down about that, but I'm just pointing out the logical fallacy involved here. Because the truth of the matter, even if an individual decides to grab his gun up and go, quote unquote, do something about it, you're not going to do anything about it. I mean, you're not. I mean, because you can't. I mean, even if you decide to become a lone wolf, one-man terrorist fighting machine, I mean, they're just going to take you out, build a narrative around that, and keep doing what they do. In fact, they'll use it as an excuse to keep doing what you do. Doing what they want to do. I mean, it's just literally impossible for that to work. I mean, and it's not. And people, you'll say this and you'll point this out, and people will try to imply that you're like somehow being some kind of pussy because you're saying this. But that is just reality. Some guy grabbing his gun up and going doing something is not going. You're not going to change the course of events with that. You're not going to change the course of events of that with that. I mean, it's not going. It's physically not possible for you to do that. So having this mentality that our guns are this magic thing that is going to somehow stop them from doing whatever they want to do, even though just looking at things by casual observation, it's pretty obvious that they're already doing whatever the hell they want to do. It is a fallacy. Now, so what do, but not to be all black pill here, because what do they fear? And they fear, I'm going to answer that, they fear any sort of organization. They fear any sort of, I listen to shows here when I have a chance. I listen to the shows here on Radio Albin and Sir Longshanks. You know, he's very supportive of Patriot. Yeah. If you're in Britain, it's patriotic alternative. But in America, you say patriot. You know, it's a patriotic alternative. Patriotic alternative that they've got over there. And I only have a passing knowledge of what they do, but mostly from listening to Sven talk about it. And you look at the way they go after I don't know whether to say patriotic or patriotic. Patriotic alternative. You look at the way they go after them. And to their credit, they're so careful to stay within. I mean, they stay so strictly within the confines of the law that they have to just basically make stuff up and try to smear them with it. So why do they go so hard after them? Because it's a way for white people to actually organize in their own interest. That's what scares them. I was having this conversation. I said, they don't care about a lone white terrorist. In fact, they want one. If they have to go out and create one themselves, they will and have, I believe, do that. Over in Britain, they just got done like convicting some kid that was like 13 years old for being like the head of a terrorist organization. What was he doing? Well, he did a pencil sketch of Hitler or some shit and was in a chat room on the internet. And he's just been brought up. They just drug him in to the legal system for being the head of a terrorist organization. They want a white right-wing terrorist. If they have to, they will go make one up. If somebody decides to go off the rails and do that on their own, all the better. Less work for them, right? But what are they concerned about? Well, they're doing everything they can to go after. I'm going to say patriotic. I'm a market. They're doing everything they can to go after patriotic alternative, even though they're so careful. No. To stay within the confines of the law. So it makes it very difficult for them to do that. Do you understand? It's yes, but they're not doing anything. They're just promoting being positive about, your history and your culture. They're not politically. You don't understand. Who does the enemy see as a threat? Well, obviously they see them as a threat. They keep going after them. They keep having to just make stuff up about them, trying to somehow frame them as being something and doing something that they're not doing. Why? Because it involves organization, and that's what they fear. They want everybody atomized. They want everybody. They've spent decades promoting this mindset of, you know, hyper-individualism. You are this lone island of yourself, and that's all that matters. All that matters is you, yourself, how you feel, what you do. You. One thing they do not, they promote the opposite in other communities. They talk about the black community as a monolithic thing, as if individual blacks don't have their own point of view in the world, which is nonsensical, but it's what's promoted. The black community is promoted as a monolithic entity. All of these other communities they talk about are promoted as a monolithic entity. The only place where it is promoted this hyper-individualistic attitude is in the white community. You are not supposed to think of yourself as a part of the white community. You are supposed to be this hyper-individual, and you are this lone thing. You, this the lone individual. That's all that counts is your individualism. Now, I've got nothing against individualism. I think it can make you stronger. But at some point in time, you need organization. You need to look at yourself as part of a larger group. And that is the one thing they don't want you doing. They do not want you to break away from the hyper-individualistic mindset. I read a deal. Somebody made a comment here a while back, and they pointed out that, you know, even you think of something like, oh, if you're in the military, what would be an individual position? You're more of an individual because you don't want to be a part of a platoon. You would be a sniper, you know. And somebody pointed out the other day here a while back, I read somebody pointed out that, you know, snipers work in teams. You know, they don't work as just alone. They don't give a guy a rifle and have him go out there all by himself. He's got a spotter. They work in teams. They work in coordination with other people because that's the only way you can be effective. They've promoted this hyper-individualistic mindset in the white community, and the one thing they do not want you to do. That's why they attack Patriotic Alternative, because, you know, even they're doing it in the name of, you know, looking at your history and your culture and your ancestors in a positive light and looking at your people in a positive light. It is breaking down and attacking their program of the hyper-individualistic mindset. That's what you need to understand. Because if you just look at it, you'd be like, well, Patriotic Alternative, they're not doing anything, you know, radical. In fact, people that want to be, they want to see something radical. They're looking at Patriotic Alternative and they're like, well, they're not doing anything radical. They're not doing enough. Never mind, they keep being smeared and attacked. Well, why? Because what they are doing, what they are by their very existence and what they are doing is attacking this hyper-individualistic mindset, which has been promoted among the people intentionally for decades, for several generations now. They want you to think of yourself as an island, not a part of a larger group. And anything that causes people to break away from that mindset is an enemy to the system. You have to understand that is what they fear. They don't fear how many guns you have safely locked away in your closet. They don't care. At the end of the day, they don't care about that. In fact, if you decide to grab up your gun and go do a terrorism, they're happy for that. They want that to happen. Because if it doesn't happen, they're going to have to make that shit up themselves. They're going to have to, and that's a lot of work. If they can get some guy to go off and do that, it's not going to change a damn thing, and it helps them with their narrative. It's less work for them. They're good with that. But what they don't want is people breaking away from, and they don't want people organizing. They don't want people attacking the hyper-individualistic mindset. You see, if you grab your gun off and go off on your own and be like, oh, I'm going to take care of this, but so somebody's got to step up and do it. You're just actually falling right into the hyper-individualistic mindset. You yourself, as the arbitrator of all things, are going to grab your gun and fix this shit right here, right now. Well, how do you think you're going to do that? I can do it. You know, why? Well, why? Because you've been indoctrinated into the hyper-individualistic mindset. You yourself have the power. It's all fallen to you. You are going to do it, and you are going to go off there and do exactly what they want you to do. I can't say this enough. They're going to, if they can't get a right-wing white terrorist to do something, they're going to make it up. They'll have to hire somebody and hire actors and set up a scenario and do it. And that's a lot of damn work and complication that to make sure that nobody's going to spill the beans. Of course, if they do spill the beans, the media is not going to tell you about it anyway, so it won't really matter. But they have to set all of it up. It's a lot of work. It's a pain in the ass. If some individual actually go do that, that helps them out. It makes life easier. They're lazy. They're government workers. They're lazy. They want to get the results with the least amount of effort possible. And that's all that does. Think these things through. But the one thing they don't want is people organized, white people organizing on any way, shape, form, or another. And patriotic alternative, they're just a positive about white culture, positive, you know, a positive message, a white positive message. That's it. It's not even hardly really, I don't even think you could call it political what they promote. It's just, they're promoting their heritage and looking at the ancestors and the history in a positive light and being proud of who they are and what they come from and all this. And yet that's a threat to the system because it is a threat to their program of the hyper-individualistic mindset. If white people start thinking of themselves as a collective group, just as they've promoted being done in all of these other communities, then all of a sudden that's going to be a problem, because then white people start looking around at how their group where their group is being herded off into and where this is heading and how they're always seem to be at the end of the in the sights of the machine, as it were, at the end of the persecution road. Is always everything is directed towards the white community. That could be a problem for them. That would be a big problem for them, because at the end of the day, as corrupt as the system is, as corrupt and it is utterly corrupt, this level of corruption is possibly unprecedented, possibly not. I'm not a historian. But at the end of the day, they still require a certain level of consent for the people to continue on. They still have to have people buying into the system at least a little bit on some level, or it all breaks down. It's a very complicated thing. I've touched on it before, but they still have to have that. They're in very dangerous territory with this whole thing they've done of openly stealing the election. They're in very dangerous territory. The more people, the more people that are like, I'm done voting, I'm done buying into the system, supporting the system in any way, shape, form, or another, the more dangerous an area they are in. As I always say, there's a reason that you look at these third world countries and, you know, it's run by a dictator as absolute power, but they'll still hold an election and he gets 100% of the vote. There's a reason they do that. Because the people have to at least buy into the idea there has to be at least a little bit of legitimacy there. And right now, this current government, this system we're under now is in very, very choppy waters. In that area, everything's not smooth sailing for them. This just seems like they do whatever they want and they're just winning, winning, winning. But they're in very dangerous territory. They are really playing with fire with this thing, because any sort of support for the system is falling off and falling off rapidly. And this will be accelerated if, you know, one aspect of this is it will be accelerated if white people dare to begin thinking collectively. Begin organizing and begin to have a collective mindset. You know, it's just the having a collective mindset versus the hyper-individualist. It doesn't matter what the group is or the excuse that you're organizing. It's the threat is in breaking away from that mindset, that slave mindset of individual, you know, hyper-individualism, and start thinking of yourself collectively. You know, that's the real threat. That's why it's so hard for them, you know, to break into these Asian countries. You know, and I'm using Asian as a very broad term here, but it's very difficult for them to break down these Asian societies, because these people are hardwired with such a group mentality, such a group mindset. You know, where white people tend to be already hardwired towards individualism, so it makes them that much more easier to manipulate and shape around. But you take a country like Japan or China, for instance, and the people are already hardwired to have a group mindset, so it's much, much more difficult for them to break those societies down, because those people just aren't hardwired towards having a hyper-individualistic mindset. Anyway, we got to wrap up on that note and get into the Christian-specific segment. I'm trying hard to get the show done within an hour. I fail week in and week out, but I do make the attempt. I do make the attempt. So we're going to wrap up the kind of regular, whatever you want to call it, the pre-sermon part or visiting outside. Get on in here, fill those pews. It's time for a Christian-specific message here, the Parish of the Patriots. And as you get settled in here, before we get into our Christian-specific message, you know, we've already gone through the listener-supported mailbag, but I have one here, and I sat with this one for a minute before doing the show. And I wanted to save this one for a Christian specific. I try to keep the sermon, as it would, separate from the rest of the show, because we do have like non-Christian people that enjoy the show. And I wanted to save this one, just this note for the Christian specific segment. And this is from Bill. Sorry to be late with the monthly tithes. And what follows is personal information I'm not going to get into. Bill's one of our monthly supporters here, and it's very much appreciated. And again, I try to be very careful about sharing people's personal information, but I will just say you do not owe me an apology for being late with your monthly tithes. I've been actually was thinking about Bill all week because I haven't heard from him. While no, not because, you know, I hadn't seen any support here. not because of that, because I know already that he's been dealing with some very tough stuff. And he's one of our folks here, and he's got some serious health problems, and he's just really, I mean, any way you cut it, he's going through a rough patch. And again, I apologize, I'm not sharing specifics out of respect for his privacy, but I would just ask, and I don't know that I've ever done this, my recollection is this is the first time, just ask that y'all will take, those of you that are Christian believers, that's why I save this for the Christian specific segment. I do ask that you just take a little time in your prayers and mention Bill, because he's faced a lot of loss, and he's got very serious things going on that he's battling with in this time in his life. So, you know, as our community of believers, I can't explain it to y'all being on this side of the microphone, and y'all are on that side of the speakers, I guess, as it were, but. You know, I, in a lot of ways, I do. I take this connection that we have, all of you, and I take it very personally. And I do feel, as it were, for all of you. So I do ask, as the if you're a Christian believer, that you make the time in your prayers for Bill in this tough time. So, no, sir, you don't ever owe me any sort of, I'm sorry for it. I understand, I'm not trying to make a big deal, but you don't owe me any sorry for being late. I appreciate any support sent, but it goes beyond that. And I just really, it is my hope that God will guide you through this very rough time, that you will find his presence and comfort moving forward in life, as this stage of life, as it were, as we all just are in these different stages as we go through life. So anyway, yes, moving right along with our Christian specific message this week, we soldier on. So let's go ahead. I always have to figure out how I want to go forward with this, and let's go ahead and just read a couple little quick verse from the Bible here. This is from Luke chapter 12. Let's just do verses 8 and 9. Jesus speaking says, "Also I say unto you, whosoever shall confess me before men, him shall the Son of Man also confess before the angels of God. But he that denieth me before men shall be denied before the angels of God." So if you confess Jesus before men, he will acknowledge you. If you deny Jesus before men, then he's basically going to deny you. If you're ashamed of Jesus, he's going to be ashamed of you. Do you get what I'm saying? Now, that is backdrop, because I was thinking, you know, what are we going to do in our Christian specific message as well? Always the big question. And you know, of course, kind of always my goal here with this is just as a, you know, for Christian believers, and for those that, you know, we have non-believers listen to this segment and get something out of it, and that's awesome. You know, at least they can understand a little bit of our mindset and where we come from with this, but this is the Christian-specific segment. My goal is always for the Christian believers to have a way to apply this stuff to how your life, to understand it in the context of your life, because to understand it personally, I mean, yes, you can't make the big picture all about you, of course not, but to understand this personally, at least to a certain extent on a personal level, is to understand it more completely. It's more real to you. It's like I can talk about an abstract concept and it might not mean anything to you, but if I talk about something that you've experienced already and you've observed in your life, it means something to you. You understand it, right? If I sit here and talk about something that you never have experienced, it doesn't matter how much I explain it, really understanding is going to be very difficult. But if I sit here and talk about, or to sit here and talk about something that you yourself has experienced, you'd be like, yes, exactly. I know what he's talking about because I've been through that. You understand it more clearly because you've experienced it personally. And it's the same way when it comes to understanding Christ and understanding the Lord in your life. The more you experience that on a personal level, the better you're going to understand it. You know, and again, that's a limited thing, and you can't become self-centered about it and make everything, you know, everything God does is about you. That is incorrect. But the more of this that you can realize how it applies to your personal life, the better you're going to understand it. Now, in our little verses we've read here, Jesus is talking about being ashamed of him, basically. If you're ashamed of Jesus and apologize for Jesus or say you don't know Jesus before men, then basically you're going to get the same thing. And you know the people, the cringe people, I've talked about this before, you know, you've known them. You've known them, and they take this to this extreme, like they bring Jesus up about everything. There are those people that are awkward. Like you walk into a place and there's a group there and you're like, hey, you know, you're trying to be friendly and you're like, oh, hey, who's this over here? Is this Bob? Hey, Bob. And everybody's over there in the background like waving you off. Don't talk to Bob. Don't talk to Bob. And you're like, well, why not? Why can't I talk to Bob? And Bob's like, hey, nice to meet you. Do you know about Jesus? And you're like, what? I thought we were getting together, you know, to have a company dinner or something, you know, and discuss work. Well, gee, well, yeah, you know, and you feel awkward. You feel awkward and you're like, oh, wait a minute. You know, but you can read this and be like, oh, man, maybe that's on me because I'm being ashamed of Jesus. Because no, it's because Bob is making everything awkward because Bob is bringing up Jesus when that is not the time. And Jesus is not demanding that you bring him up in weird, awkward social situations. Jesus made people feel awkward and uncomfortable, but Jesus isn't really, I mean, that isn't like the whole point. Why did Jesus make people feel awkward and uncomfortable? Because Jesus spoke the truth, and this gets to the heart. One of the things, I know I kind of beat this to death on the show, and I'm aware of this, and I'm keenly aware of it. But the fact of the matter is, just as the MCC is over here, Modern Cuck Church, for those of you who maybe are new around these parts, the MCC is out here and promotes hippie Jesus, and Jesus is love. Love, 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 Jesus loves, 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 loves Jesus. They promote this message of Jesus equals love so much to the extreme. You know, here at the Parish of the Patriots, you know, I promote the message of Jesus is truth, and that is from his word. Again, who are you, Jesus? And what did he say? I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Truth is that centered word. Now it gets a little complicated because see, it may not necessarily involve being told to deny Jesus technically as a name. It's kind of like this notion of when you read the book of Revelation and they talk about the mark of the beast and everybody has this vision in their mind that somebody at some point is going to show up and like put a brand on your forehead of 666. Well, that would be too obvious now, wouldn't it? I don't for a minute think that is what is going to happen. I do think you're seeing a reflection of that in the world around us, but I never expect that people are going to go around and like brand you with the devil's number on you. I think it is much more nuanced than that, and yet much more out in the open. Here's the thing. Jesus, and I say this with the conviction, of the Holy Spirit, Jesus and the truth are inseparable. You cannot separate Jesus and the truth. Just as he said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. I always look at that because truth is wedged right in there. Way in life are like bookends, all equally important. All these three words describe who Jesus is. When he was asked, who are you? Well, here's the answer in three words. In three words or less, Jesus, tell us who you are. And that's the three words he gave. And truth is nice right in the middle, bookended. You cannot separate truth from Jesus. Don't get bogged down when I say that in thinking that when Aunt May is at the family reunion and says, does this dress look nice? And you say, yes, Aunt May, you look very nice. Instead of saying, no, it looks like some shit made by Omar the tent maker, you fat bitch. What the hell? Who told you that looked good? That would be factual, but that is not the truth we're talking. If you're new around here, no, this is not the MCC. We we're right up here. Telling it like it is. That is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about truth. Truth. We're not talking about, well, you told Aunt May, yes, you look nice, to be polite, because it doesn't matter. We're talking about hard truths. You get, because we are in a collapsing society, a satanic society. Understand that you are in a satanic world, because as this, the truth is inseparable from Christ, the lie is inseparable from Satan. I mentioned earlier in the show, for Christian believers, this makes sense. Everything is topsy-turvy. Everything's upside down. They call injustice justice. They call truth the lie and misinformation. They call a message given out in love as hatred. But why is that? And if you're not a Christian believer, it doesn't make any sense. But if you're a Christian believer, it makes perfect sense, because the lie is inseparable. Satan cannot separate himself from the lie. It's who he is. Who he is. Likewise, Jesus is inseparable from truth. You cannot separate Christ from truth. They are inseparable. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Satan is the lie and the murderer. You can't separate him from that. He doesn't have a good day where he decides, I'm tired of the lie. Here, let me promote the truth to you. He cannot. He is literally incapable of it. It'd be like asking me to jump up and fly to the moon. I'm incapable of that. Satan is incapable of being separated from the lie. It all makes sense when you look at it in that context. But in this collapsing society, it's very likely at some point in time, because it's coming, if it hasn't already for you, is coming. There will come a time as the oppression becomes worse. You're going to get cornered up. They're going to corner you up. And they're going to want you to denounce the truth. They're not going to tell you to denounce Jesus. They're not going to say that. Don't expect that. You have this vision and they're going to show them and say, do you believe in Jesus? And your life is on the line and you have to either say, yes, I believe in Jesus, and take a bullet to the head. Or you have to say, no, I don't believe in Jesus. And they might let you live. That is not the way it works. They will want you to renounce the truth and to proclaim their lie as the truth. This is the dangerous term. And I'm bringing this up because I don't want you to be unawares. I don't want you to get caught unaware and step on a landmine without even realizing it. Because understand, Jesus isn't like, I always say, don't get this mindset like God is out there just waiting to catch you on a technicality so he could drop the hammer on you. As if he wanted to do that, he wouldn't have gone through the whole sending his son here to die for our sins. He would just drop the hammer on us if that was his goal here. He didn't have to have an excuse. But still, it's important not to, deny Christ and not even realize you're doing it. At some point in time, more than likely, at some point in time, and probably the way things are going downhill, like a snowball headed for hell, you're going to get cornered up and you're going to face the choice. They're going to want you to renounce the truth and reaffirm the lie that they promote in society. The lie. They want you to promote the lie. And now it's decision time. Do you refuse to renounce the lie or renounce the truth? Do you refuse to endorse their society-wide lie and say that that is the truth? If you sit there and say, no, all of that stuff that was true that I said isn't true at all. In fact, you're right. You're right. All of those things that you say are true that are actually a lie are the truth. That is the real truth. I've seen the light now. Now, please leave me alone. If you are ashamed of the truth, then you're essentially being ashamed of Christ. They don't have to ask you specifically about Jesus. They're not going, in fact, I would say they're not going to do that. But they will separate you from the truth. And remember what we say, Christ, Jesus, and the truth are inseparable. You cannot separate the two. So if they separate you, they get you to renounce and proclaim their lie as truth. They've already done it. They've drove that wedge. They've got you to be ashamed of Jesus. Knowing this, you need to safeguard yourself. As you pronounce your truths, you want to do so. And these are things, learn from those who have been there and done that. Because if you say the truth in a manner that's so easy to take out of context, because they're going to bring social pressure on you from, you know, it's not just going to be society. They're going to, you know, not just from them. They're going to get where your friends and your family are going to look sideways at you and such. And anything that they can take out of context. So when you're like edge posting on the internet, you may be edge posting truth. But they can present that in a way to make, to intensify, the difficulty of sticking with the truth. You understand what I'm saying? If you speak the truth in a manner to where when they bring the pressures of social shaming to you, when they bring all this pressure down on you, you want to force them to do so in a way to where you're more comfortable. You want to at least minimize the amount of pressure they're able to bring by making sure that you speak the truth in a way that's easier to defend, if that makes sense to you. And yes, I'm speaking from experience here, because you have to stick with the truth. You have to stick with the truth, but it's going to be a little easier for you to do that if you're not defending the truth that was spoken in the context of basically, you know, shitposting, edge posting on the internet, you know, just to be outlandish for likes on social media or whatever the case may be. It's going to be easier to stand with the truth if you've spoken it in a serious manner that you can defend in a serious way. And I hope that makes sense to you. So you want to be sure to present your truth in a way to where you're always prepared to defend it. That way you're always prepared to stand for Christ. The two are not inseparable. Jesus and the truth, Satan and the lies. I talked earlier, they're not going to go around and hold you down and put a Satan brand, a literal fire brand. They're going to tattoo 666 on your forehead, and everybody's walking around with a 666 tattoo on their forehead. But is it outlandish to imagine that people are walking around submitting to the lie and proclaiming the lie as truth? How is that not the mark of the beast? Because the beast is inseparable from the lie. So if Satan is inseparable from the lie and everybody is going around proclaiming the lie as truth, and see, I'm a good person. See, I'm in the good category here. I'm one of the good people. I'm proclaiming what society says, even though it's a lie. I'm proclaiming that as the truth. Walking around with that tattoo on your head. At 666 tattoo, because you're endorsing the lie. You're submitting to the lie. If you could take people that promote and submit to and willingly acquiesce to the lie, and you could, like, metaphor, kind of like the whole movie, you know, with the moving the glasses, and you see the skeleton, the skeleton people, you know, the aliens or whatever. You remember the movie? They Live, I think that was the name of the movie. Like, if you put the glasses on and everybody that's going around promoting and submitting and you know, they're on in with the lie, you could see that as a 666 on their head. You could stand in the MCC and look across the congregation, you'd see a whole lot of sixes. 6,666s or something like that. You would see a whole bunch of that because the lie, they promote the lies. They sit there in front of their woman lesbian minister talking, you know, promoting their, I don't know, 7-year-old transgender Sunday school class or whatever the hell is being promoted. And there's the congregation, all the 6,666s, the six numbers everywhere. You just see six. You can't go anywhere without seeing all the six. And you're glad I got to take the glasses off. And it's funny because I'm sitting here taking my glasses off as I do this, like, as if y'all can see me. It's insanity. But it's true. These things are subtle. And there is already immense pressure. Those of you, you know, I'm not trying to frame up people, but those of you, for instance, who just simply such as myself, refuse to wear the masks. And you don't wear the mask and you walk into a business and you're like one of three people in the entire place not wearing the mask, you know, and you're walking around not wearing your mask and you feel the pressure. Nobody says anything to you, but you feel the pressure because they're all looking at you sideways. All looking at you sideways. It's going to get worse. Everybody now is in the target. Everybody's in the crosshairs if they do not promote the lie. And there's so many, I mean, every aspect of this society now is on, is propped up on the foundation of a lie. Every single, literally every single aspect of this society is propped up on a lie. So the pressure will go up, not down. Pressure is going to go up to proclaim the lie as truth. And this is where you have to be wary and you have to understand where you're at, understand where you're stepping. Because Jesus is truth and Satan is a lie. If you are ashamed of Jesus, then you are likewise ashamed of the truth. If you renounce, and I don't, by shamed, by the way, I don't mean that feeling, that emotion, because they will shame you. They will turn everybody against you and societally isolate and try to shame you. And they'll portray you as all of these things. I'm not talking about the emotion. I'm talking about the action. Remember, the Bible does not deal in emotion, deals in action. I'm talking about, do you come out and you see these people that get in the woke mob's crosshairs, and what are the first thing they do? They run around and apologize. They haven't done anything wrong. They run around and apologize, and I shouldn't have said that, and I shouldn't have said that person was okay, and I shouldn't have done this. They renounce as quickly as they can. They no. Those folks are essentially renouncing Jesus, whether they're a Christian believer or not, because they know maybe what they spoke is the truth. But if you know it's the truth, but you apologize and renounce it in favor of the lie, this is literally what is spelled out in our little bit of Bible verse that we've read here. It's literally spelled out. That is what you see happening. When you see people that say something true and then get called out by the woke mob, and their reaction is to grovel, apologize, renounce that truth, and say, no, I'm one of y'all. Here's what's really real is this lie that you promote. What you are witnessing is the public renunciation of the truth, and thus the public renunciation of Christ. We got to wrap up on that note. Oh, what a shock. We went long this week, but a little less long. See, I'm whittling it down. I'm having to work on this. I'm whittling it down. Someday the show will actually be an hour long. Got to wrap up on that note. And once again, glad you could join us this week. Appreciate all of you. Pay your tithes and do financially support the show. It really means a lot to me, not just monetarily, but just in the fact, it's like I said earlier, it's like having a pen pal, like hearing from you and just knowing that you're getting something out of the show really means the world to me. And I really, really do appreciate it. We're wrapping up on that note. Again, be sure and catch us. I'm on with Sven Longshanks, Sir Longshanks, on Fridays for the Daily Nationalist. You don't want to miss out on that. It's always fun. We always have a good time. It's always a pleasure to sit down with Sir Longshanks. And you know, we'll be back here every Tuesday. A week's going to fly by. Once again, no reason to think it won't. We'll be back right here for the Parish of the Patriots.